I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man, I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man, I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man, I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita.
Good evening, Vashon Island. This is Megan Hastings, and this is the Cats and Jammer Follies. Good evening. How is everybody doing this evening? I am here, and I do this fun little radio show where I have friends and loved ones come on and talk about crazy experiences that they've had while traveling. And it can be in a crazy place, and it can be in your yard. It doesn't matter, as long as it's a good story that I like to share with all you people out there in Vashon Land. And today I have an old friend of mine on. Not that she's old. We've just known each other for a long time. And her name is Hetty Goodrich. Hetty, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Megan. It's nice to hear from you again.
It's nice to hear from you again. Hetty is a beautiful woman who she and I shared a time together when we were teenagers living as exchange students in Italy. In the very, very late 80s. And it was quite an amazing time. And she was in a city called Naples. And I was in a couple different ones. And but we always found time to be together. And we had originally been together for the first month that we arrived and spent a lot of time in this little town together and became good friends. And then we would go on separate ways, but always come back to each other. And I would go visit her throughout the year in her town. Hetty, you want to tell us a little bit about your experience there? And then we'll jump into what you're doing with those experiences.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I don't know how you feel about it, but for me, it was a life-changing experience because, you know, at that time, you know, when we did our exchange program, you couldn't even choose what country you were going to go to. You could
No.
only say what your preference was.
Yeah.
So it was really like destiny just throwing you.
It really
you know,
was.
Under the bus or, you know...
It was crazy. I know. I remember.
And so I feel that it was my. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. I just remember I was like, okay, I'm going to pick Italy and then I'm going to pick Germany. And I didn't know where we were going. Nobody knew until we got to, I think, Belgium.
I know.
It was kind of crazy.
It's just incredible, the experience that we had, the amount of learning that goes on when you're so young, when you're just 16.
Yeah.
And you don't know much about the world because it's not like today with...
there's no internet.
You know, there's more. I think young people travel more and there was no internet. So, you know, we were just really unprepared emotionally, of course, because we were young. And then we were kind of unprepared intellectually because we didn't know about where we were going. So it was
no
a
idea.
Real immersive experience. I think that's how you would experience it, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
But you know what? I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, my life has taken a complete turn, you know, for me. And like, I ended up going to Italy, as you did, and that has been a lifelong connection for me.
But you ended up...
I had such an amazing experience there. I ended up in the deep south, near a town near Naples, which, you know, it didn't match with my ideas, my notions about what Italy was supposed to be like. You know, southern Italy has a lot of economic issues. It's unemployment, you know, there's traffic, there's pollution. It was just so much of an overwhelming kind of mess.
And that really hasn't changed that much.
No, I think people are waiting for it to change and pushing for it to change. And it's just the way it is. You know, there's a big difference between the north of Italy and the south. There's
completely
political issues.
They might as well be different countries.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
It's completely different. I mean, some people call the South like Morocco. You know, it is a little bit more like Middle Eastern in a way. You know, the marketplaces and the people like haggling and the noise levels and the music and the warmth. You know, people, strangers inviting you into their homes to drink, you know, coffee in our case. In the Middle East, it would be tea, but it's not really not that different. And that was the experience that I had, you know, being taken in by this very warm, a chaotic family who just treated me like a daughter from the very beginning.
Yeah, you lucked out 100%. 130%. Yeah. You really did.
Yeah. 30, yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I got best of the both worlds because I also was in the South for a bit, but then I also got time in the North. So I really got to learn both of those aspects mm-hmm. of it and to appreciate both of them for what they are. So, Hedy,
you were in Sardinia at the beginning, right?
I was mm-hmm, in Cagliari. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is it's a whole nother ball game. Talk about being close to Morocco. It's so close to Tunisia. There's like, so Hedy became a writer many years ago and has been writing for, you went and you finished high school in Italy and then you went to university in Italy. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing that you actually ever left.
The reason why that life changes because, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just said it's amazing that you're not still there.
Well, I guess that's another story. I do think it was my destiny to leave Italy at a certain point. But the reason I stayed so long was because of my host mother, who took me in as a daughter and kind of wouldn't let me go. She was like, when our exchange year was over and I went back to America, she was like, when are you coming back to Italy to be with me?
Aww.
And she pushed and found a way to get me back to study and finish high school in Italy. So I have an American high school diploma and an Italian one.
Oh,
and
you're
with
so
that
lucky.
Italian high school diploma, I was able to get into university. And so I have a degree from Italy. So, it just, triggered this lifelong relationship with the place and with the people.
And your first book, which is called Lost in the Spanish Quarter, came out, is it 3 years ago now? Two years ago?
2019.
Okay, mm-hmm. So right before the pandemic.
3 years ago. Seems like longer, but it's not.
Well, the pandemic's really just kind of dragged on.
A lot has happened. That's the thing. The book came out, and then, once you're in there, in that publishing world, then, you have a contract for another book, and you've got publishers from other countries, and it just kind of snowballs in a really lovely, very surprising way.
And since that book, you have your newest book came out.
Yes.
Would you please tell us a little bit about that, please, Ms. Hedy?
Yes. I'm very excited to tell you about it.
Me too.
Tell you about it today because it's called The American. And I'm sorry to inform your listeners that it's not out in English yet because I write in Italian and, first book was in Italian and then I translated it into the English. It came out with HarperCollins, and then it got translated into other languages as well. The same with the second book. I wrote it in Italian. It was sold to different foreign countries, and then I translated it back into English,
Which is insane.
So Hedy. Now we're looking for the English language publisher. I know. It doesn't make any sense.
It's amazing to me that you can do that, that skill.
I'm amazed, too. I have to say I'm amazed every time. And when I, just before I start writing a book, I know now the kind of creative process. I have a real, low self-esteem about it. I think my Italian isn't good enough to do this. What am I thinking?
Oh, my God.
Crazy.
You actually are crazy.
I know. But then when I sit down and I do it, I think I am crazy. When I sit down at the computer to start writing, there is a kind of a magic that happens. And, words that I didn't even remember I knew are in Italian are just coming to me. And they're the right words at the right time. So I just have to let that flow happen and not worry about it. Because it happens in Italian that way, but it doesn't happen when I write in English. Well, because I can intellectualize things in English. I'm an English teacher. So, I can judge.
Right.
I can judge in sort of intellectual way and analyze. But I don't have that magical creative flow in English. So there you go.
That's so interesting.
So the second book, should I tell you about the second book a little bit?
Yeah, please tell us a little bit about it, and then you're going to read some of it for us, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm going to actually read a little bit. So the book is inspired by my host mother, who you know very well.
I do.
And we worked on it together. It was an incredible experience. She lives in Chicago now.
She doesn't
even live in Italy anymore. She lives in Chicago, and I live in New Zealand, and we would get on the phone a couple times a week or write each other, you know, text each other, and she would just tell me all these stories from her childhood, growing up in southern Italy, you know, just after the Second World War. And some of the stories I had heard from when I was a teenager living with her, and some of them I hadn't. And I realized that it was just extraordinary, rich material that needed to be shared, because she is a real storyteller. She remembers all the details.
Oh, she's a real storyteller.
So I was
a larger-than-life woman. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Absolutely. You know, she's the kind of woman, without even speaking English, she can go live in Chicago, get a green card, and have hundreds of friends. And she still doesn't speak English. Like, she's just magnetic.
She is. And she parties every night at the blues clubs. That's what she does.
She is a force of nature. She's just a force of nature. And I realized, you know, speaking to her about her past, that she really had that growing up. She always had that energy in her, and that rebelliousness and strength, you know, just inner strength. She did not fit in southern Italy. She wasn't the kind of girl who just, you know, sit
conformed
and wait for her, you know, husband to come home, conform. She just didn't fit in. She was always really headstrong, and she was always this person. So it was really interesting working with her on the book and using quite a few, but not all of, you know, her memories of her childhood, and putting them into a story that made sense, that was kind of inspired by my friendship with her, which is more like a family connection.
Absolutely.
But also kind of playing with it so that it's actually, you know, a fictional story. And it took her a while to get used to the idea that it was actually going to be a fictional story, but she was just very gracious about the whole thing.
How long did you guys work together on it?
Less than a year. It was actually this is my lockdown book. We had a very long, very strict lockdown here in Auckland. And during that time, I just spoke to her and wrote. So it came out quite fast and beautiful and effortless. And it actually made us tighter as well. I felt like we already adored each other and loved each other, but this just strengthened our bond.
Well, Hetty, we're all want to hear it, so will you please read us some passages?
Okay, I'm just going to read you the first passage, which is actually the first page of the book, of the manuscript. I'm going to call it the manuscript because it hasn't come out in English yet, but let's call it the manuscript, and let's say that its title in English is going to be The American.
Okay.
What I don't know yet is that the weekend that Anita Palomba finds me, her American daughter, is the same weekend she loses the man that she loves. Perhaps it is written somewhere that punishment shall descend upon she who asks for too much in life. Or maybe it's just the planet restoring its natural order, by which at any given time, there's always an equal amount of males and females, drought and rain, day and night. She could have ended up with some other daughter, like Brenda the Californian, who was unloaded from the Circumvesuviana train along with our luggage and is now looking around with sheer delight, despite the fact that this is no postcard or storybook, not the Italy of the papery, flimsy kind, but the one from the 5 o'clock news. Her mascara makes her eyes appear even more wonderstruck than usual and artlessly, hopefully green. I'm not bold enough to wear mascara, to shout out to the whole wide world which half of the human race I belong to. But Brenda is a positive person. She's tall with a spine as straight as the recently built apartment blocks huddling around to spy on our every move, their balconies thrown open with heat exhaustion. She could have had a Swedish daughter, Sif, whose unembellished expression mirrors my own growing concern, or even a son, like Juan or Jesus, who both lost the first letter of their names as soon as they touched down at Rome's Fiumicino airport. Wang, Estus. Bianosera, Jesus reads aloud now as he rests his bags beneath the Bianosera sign at our train stop, relishing this little linguistic revenge while he can, while there are still no natives or adults in sight. But now Anita got me. She must have recognized me from the picture on the application form, because she's now heading towards me smiling, positively beaming, as though bursting inside with a secret she can't wait to tell me. So I could go on, but I could also stop there.
You know what? I can totally see that happening. Her smile lighting up and yeah. Oh, that's beautiful, Hetty. What a nice introduction. It's a beautiful song, Hetty. Who is that?
Was it Rita Pavone?
Yeah, I don't know it. I love it. Is she Napoletana?
Sorry, I'm sorry?
Oh, is she from Naples, the singer?
She's not, but I always connected my host mother to, whose real name is Rita. I always connected her to Rita Pavone, who was about the same age. And yeah, and that was a song that she would have listened to growing up.
I can see her listening to that song. Listening to a lot of music. So when you got to listen to all these stories, which you've heard her life, did she get to leave Naples much or that area and travel? She really didn't as a young person.
She didn't. And in fact, if we have time, I can read another small passage for you, because which talks about her marriage. She was married at 16.
That's why she and her son are so close in
for
age.
Love.
Yeah.
Yes. So she married and had children very young. So she just had to grow up fast. And she didn't have any chance to, you know, travel or do any of the things, of course, the privileges that we have today. She had to grow up fast and learn the hard way.
Well, I think that she's made up for...
And they were hard times. Economically, those were hard times.
Oh, of course. I'm sure. Right after World War II, they would have absolutely had to have been. And especially Southern Italy, more than anywhere else. Yes, I would love to hear the passage about that. But I was going to say that I do feel that for what she's gone through, that her spirit is amazing and that she's made up for any hardships by really... making up for it in the second part of her life.
Absolutely. Yeah. What an amazing person.
Will you read the other excerpt, Hetty?
All right. So, yes, here we go. All right. So, just a tiny bit of background about this is a scene about before she was... just before she got married, a few days before she got married. However, her fiancé's family, which was made up of a whole bunch of women, they were not, you know, his mother, his aunts, his sisters, they were not happy about his marriage to this much younger girl. And they started saying around the town that the marriage was happening. It was a shotgun wedding because Anita was pregnant. It wasn't true, but they were trying to break them up. So, of course, headstrong woman got angry about that because she actually loved him. And here's Anita Palomba telling the story. "I distinctly remember the Saturday before the ceremony," says Anita. "On that fateful morning, she got out of bed, got dressed, and as always helped put away the bed frames and mattresses before sitting at the table with her parents and unmarried siblings. Before a cup of warm milk. That time, however, she didn't dip her bread into it. She wasn't hungry. 'Mama, I'm going out,' she said. 'Where are you going at this hour?' 'To the church. I want to see what flowers the florist has delivered.' Her mother understood straight away that it was a fib, but she couldn't figure out what Anita had gotten in her head to do. Surely she could not have imagined Otherwise, she would have tried to stop her, even knowing it would have been pointless. But she was a mother, and she would have tried her best anyway. Her father, on the other hand, said as he lifted his gaze from the newspaper, "Whatever you're about to do, my girl, put yourself first and think about what you want from life. And then you can think about the flowers and all the rest." Unlike his wife, he guessed that Anita was heading to Carmine, that's her fiancé, Carmine's house, to set the record straight in that household ruled by women. It was July, and despite it being early in the morning, the air was balmy and uplifting. Anita walked in the middle of the road. There weren't any automobiles to speak of anyway. She'd booked the wedding for July 4th, America's Independence Day. And the knowledge that she, too, was on the verge of independence made her every fiber in her body buzz pleasantly. She could even feel it in the cotton fibers of her dress, in the red poppies printed on it, and every step her sandals took across the cobblestones only strengthened her determination. At the third floor of that stately but time-worn building, she knocked on the door. Opening up, her mother-in-law-to-be asked bluntly, "Something wrong?" "Yes," Anita said in response. Then, seeing as how the woman wasn't inviting her in, she added with uncanny calm, "On Tuesday, you and father are coming to the wedding," she said, referring to her father-in-law. "The rest of the family will be staying home, because if any one of my future sister-in-laws or aunts dares to turn up, I'll be at that church like grease lightning. I'm young, and it won't be hard for me to find another man to marry." Without further explanation, no need to add that if common decency hadn't forbidden it, she would have gladly told Carmine's parents not to bother showing up either. She turned around and went back home. Expecting some sort of clarification, her mother asked, "Did you like the flowers? Are they all right?" "Tonight we'll find out if the flowers are all right or not." And in fact, no sooner had the sun set than her fiancé came a-knocking, wild with rage, to inform his future in-laws of the brazen conditions their youngest daughter had imposed and the reckless threat she'd made. Anita listened without making a peep. It was her father who answered. "If my daughter says she'll leave, you can bet she sure will." "And don't you doubt it. Once she's made up her mind about something, no one can stop her," her mother added. "If our family nicknamed her the American, there must be a good reason for it, don't you think? Now, Carmine, you decide what you want to do." 3 days later, they got married in the half-empty church. And a year and a half later, Umberto, her first son, was born.
Oh, wow. I didn't know any of that. I knew that there was something between...
Well...
I knew there was something, but I never asked what it was. I mean, with Massimo's dad, Umberto's father.
Exactly. That's the incredible thing about talking to my host mother for such a long period about her life, is that I did not realize until now, because I'm 51 now, years later, I didn't realize until now that they used to call her the American.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
A young woman. That was her nickname. Right? She wasn't open about that. That was her nickname. So everything just made sense. You know, everything just fell into place. I was like, of course they called her the American.
Of course.
She was so independent. She dyed her hair blonde. She didn't listen to anybody. She did the things the boys did. She wore pants. She got a job. She got divorced. She was the American. And so I just found there was a kind of a poetic, you know, beauty in that.
Yes, absolutely. And that it would come around and then she would get you. Another independent American.
She would get me, and then she would end up going to live in America. Like, yeah. It's just magic.
How much older was Carmine to?
He was like in his 30s.
Oh my God, really?
Sorry, I thought that, okay, again. Late 20s or early 30s. Yeah, it was a big difference.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that her father really stood up for her. Because during that period, I don't think a lot of Italian Southern fathers would have stood up quite so boldly for their daughter in that regard.
Right. I know. I think she had an amazing family, and she always, you know, always spoken very sweetly of her family. To be honest, she She would always say things like, you know, we were poor, we didn't have any money, but we loved each other.
Well, that's obvious because that's all she's got is love. In fact, she calls my husband her boyfriend.
Oh.
It's pretty sweet. Every time she sees him, she's like, oh, my boyfriend. Hedy, I want to thank you so much for coming on. I am so excited for this. I'm going to wait for it to be translated into English. And I love your writing so much. And I'm going
to... Well, I've translated if you want. And I can send you the PDF or you can
yes.
wait for it to come out.
Send it to me.
In a proper published form.
No, I would love it. I would love it so much. Please.
Sorry, I can't. If any listeners want to have the PDF, I'm sorry, I can't. But I can send it to you because you're my dear friend.
And I won't share. I promise.
I'm sure. I trust you.
Just wait.
Porte casuno con usted marreta, una cuppulella che vi si era alzata, passa scampagnando pattuleta, con mano a papà te fa guardare. Tuo fa l'americano, americano, americano, senta a me chi to fa fa. Tu vuoi vivere alla moda, ma se bevi whisky and soda, poi ti senti disturbato. Tu abballo rock and roll, tu gioca a baseball, fai sorte per Camella, chi te li dà la borsetta di mamma. Tuo fa l'americano, americano, americano, ma si nati in Italia.
Again, that was Hedy Goodrich, and she's calling in from Auckland, New Zealand, to share with us her tales of a beautiful book that she has written, one of two that she has published. And Hedy Goodrich, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Thank you, Megan.
It's always nice to hear your voice. This is Megan Hastings, Voice of Ashon 101.9. Thank you so much.